Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Very much, Mr. Christopher Fritchie, one of his original compositions. Thank you so much. And welcome, Skylar, to our band. And there's Steve. And good morning to you, the early crowd, so well behaved and polite. Let's put an end to that right now. Won't you please say hello to somebody and welcome them to the center? Hi there. Wonderful. The song that you just heard that Christopher composed, he calls it Who, and it's based on a very well-loved poem by Rumi. Now, Rumi, he didn't give titles to his poems, and this particular poem is often referred to by the line in the poem that people love the most. It's often called Unfold Your Own Myth. Because that line happens in the poem. And I'm guessing, people, we like that idea that there is a kind of epic grandness in us, a greatness, mythological proportions that we have some say in, we've got some choice in. We love that. Got very quiet. You're hoping I won't tell you it's not so. Well, it's interesting. The poem goes on to invite us to not be satisfied with stories of how it all worked out for other people, but to step boldly into our own stories. Okay, now we're feeling better. Yeah. And there's a reference in the poem about a bucket being let down, and then when it's pulled up, it brings with it a flowing prophet. Well, it's a reference to Joseph. Joseph was the dreaming prophet. I guess that's why he's called a flowing prophet, because dreams are like that, flowing. Remember the Tim Rice and the Andrew Lloyd Webber, the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat Joseph story? Well, it's a story from the Bible in that, as well as in this poem. It's a famous story of Jacob and his son Joseph that illustrates how everything in life has significance and connection, but it's revealed at its appointed proper time. See, Joseph is Jacob's favorite son, and his favoritism, the father's favoritism to the son, causes trouble among the other brothers to the point where they want to kill him. That's how bad it is. And one day, the other brothers are out tending the herd, and Jacob, the father, says, I want you, Joseph, my favorite son, to go out there, check up on them, see how they're doing. So off he goes to find where his brothers are tending the sheep, and he can't seem to find them. He gets lost. And he comes upon a stranger. Remember last week, Rabbi George talked to us about the stranger? You can watch the video. That was epic. So Joseph comes across the stranger who asks him what he's doing. He says, I'm looking for my brothers. And the stranger says, well, I happened to overhear them. They said they were moving to a new location. So he gives Joseph a little bit of direction, some where to go. And Joseph eventually catches up with his brothers, who by that point are overcome with jealousy, and they have a whole complicated plot to get rid of him. And in discussion, they decide it's best to first throw him in a well. You know, while they figure it out. It's brutal. They leave him there. And while they're wandering around, they come across some traders, slavers, really, and they sell him. They say, a brother's in the well. You can have him for so much. And the slavers go, and they somebody drops the bucket and pulls up a young man who is eventually taken to Egypt, where he becomes the flowing prophet whose interpretation through dreams changes the world. But before we go to that, let's look at the actor in the supporting role of the stranger. The one who gave him directions, remember him? The simple, seemingly meaningless act. Now that stranger, there's no account of who he is. What was he doing there? Why was it so important to put him in the story? What challenges was he facing? Was he happy? Did he have a headache? Had he eaten that day? How was his family? Was he carrying with him life burdens? Did he feel valued, thanked, seen, heard? Was he a Democrat, a libertarian? We don't know anything about him. But without him, nothing happens. If Joseph had not met him, he wouldn't have found his way to his brothers. Had he not found his way to his brothers, he wouldn't have been thrown in a well and sold into slavery. Had he not been thrown in the well, he wouldn't have been raised up and taken to Egypt. Had he not been taken to Egypt, he would have never been brought to the Pharaoh who had troubling dreams. Had he not been brought to the Pharaoh, he would not have interpreted those dreams. Had he not interpreted those dreams, Egypt would not have been saved from famine. Had Egypt not been saved from famine, Jacob's family would not have immigrated to Egypt for food. Had he not done that, then the Israelites would not have migrated into Egypt. Had they not done that, then Moses would never have been born, and neither would he have led them out. And had that not happened, there would have been no Ten Commandments. Can an ordinary person really change things? It happens all the time, whether they know it or not. Not in the epic, mythic way we expect. That's why, in my opinion, the poem asks the question, who let the bucket down? And then Chris gives us the answer. It could be you. There's something beautiful in that question. Because the person who let the bucket down is also not named, just like the stranger who gave direction. Both essential, but just figures in the background. You know, so many people, when it comes to the movies, we think of and remember and admire the main character. The heroes, the heroines, the villains, those are the ones that capture our attention. But who is letting the bucket down? It could be you. You know, that time when you helped a stranger. That time when you gave directions to somebody who was seemingly lost, struggling with the language. Or that time when you said you were sorry, when it was difficult to do so, to make a repair attempt. Or that time you went without something so that your children or family or neighbors could have something. Or that time you helped a member on your team at work complete a task that they weren't getting right. Who is making the story of life possible? It could be you. No, it is you. Not in an epic, mythic way, because people on the other end of the story may not even know your name or what part you played, and yet without you, the story doesn't happen. I recently watched the documentary, The Last Watch, about Game of Thrones, the behind the scenes, the crew, and the extras. That was something. Suddenly, this whole world of support came to life. Suddenly, I had names and faces for people who were just shadows. You know, tens of millions of Americans stay up every year to watch the Academy Awards. I've always loved the award for the role of best supporting actor. I've always loved that because I think many of us understand that role. We understand, you know, not being in the main role, not getting all the attention, and nevertheless, an important part to the unfolding of whatever it is. Like in our center, I think about the many service groups at our center functioning behind the scenes. To many of us, they're just shadows. You know, like our spiritual care group, visiting people who are sick. Or like our telephone ministry of prayer volunteers, praying with people they may never, ever hear from again or even meet. Or our video ministry team working endless hours to provide content that makes its way into the homes of thousands, if not tens of thousands of people in Latin and Central America who we may never, ever meet. Or like our bulletin and web team and print material, who are they? Who is producing that bulletin that you have? All the material for class, who are they? Or the people who put the cones out or make the coffee, or our prison ministry volunteers whose work may turn heartbreak into action for somebody who will eventually show up in a place where they are welcomed. Our Project Sleepwarm volunteers, or our receptionists, or our gardeners, or our youth program volunteers. You know, the crew, the extras, working behind the scenes, contributing what they can without maybe ever knowing the exact impact of their contribution. Our center, in the same way, is contributing to the world at large through our nonprofit program. You know how we donate to nonprofit organizations doing work in the world. You know about that, right? Well, I have a list that Jan Davis compiled from when we first started doing it. It's too fast to read, but have a look at this. And that's not including this year. Now, I wanted you to see that, first, because it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. And secondly, because I realize that as individuals, you and I may not be able to get up, quit our jobs, and sign up to do all of the work that these organizations are doing. So we do what we can. We give what we can so that other people can do what they can. They can do the kind of work that supports our shared values. In other words, we, in this case, are working in the background, and not, some of those people will never ever step foot in here and will never ever know who we are or that dollar that came from you. They may never understand that, and we may never understand the impact of our work in our role as supporting actors, and sometimes we will not know that the person somewhere in one of those organizations that we are lifting up is a flowing prophet who will do something great one day that cannot happen until we did our part. You know, one nonprofit organization, the director came and told us that they were sitting, having a meeting in the leadership team about how to abandon the organization because things were so difficult. And our check arrived in the mail during that meeting. And we opened a door. And they decided to keep going. do. We don't always know that. Rabbi Harold Kushner, in his book, Living a Life That Matters, he talks about a wonderful life, which you may be familiar with. It's the story of George Bailey, that small town banker who's always doing the right thing and he's always generous and kind, and his business, nevertheless, is going to fail. And he falls into the thinking that he would be better off, the world would be better off, if he committed suicide. And at that point, an angel appears, a stranger, and talks to him at a critical moment and shows him how the world most certainly would not be better off if he had not existed. Because small actions, even the small actions that he did during the normal course of his work, had radically beneficial impact on individuals and, as the angel shows, on society in general. Still, I can see how we might yearn to do epic things, mythic things, to make a difference. And how we might be concerned that we're not contributing enough, you know, because the world is in a mess. Is it enough that we're doing? It seems hard to see our way through. Thornton Wilder, in his book, The Eighth Day, gives us a terrific image of a tapestry to help understand. Because a tapestry from one side is a beautiful pattern with a picture in it. It's an intricately woven piece of art. It uses threads of different colors to make an inspiring picture until you turn it over and look at the other side, where it is a hodgepodge of thread and mess, some short, some long, some cut, some knotted, and going off in different directions. I mean, if you stand back, you can sometimes get a sense of what might be on the other side. You can see the vague picture, but not the epic glory that is on the other side. Sometimes I think the world is on the wrong side of a tapestry. But sometimes my life feels like it's on the other side of a tapestry. It's those moments, maybe you know them, when I'm looking at the backside of things. You know, not able to see the purpose, the thread. And sometimes it's because, you know, the pain is too much, or the loss is too great, or the road is too steep. So now, in those moments, I remember that there is plenty that is hidden from me on this journey in every moment. Maybe it's because my consciousness is still expanding and growing. So now I know I will likely understand things later that I could not understand while they were happening. So I remind myself frequently that there is a bigger picture. I tell myself that the pattern is merely hidden right now. And I remind myself frequently that I am in the right place at the right time, successfully engaged in the right activity, like Florence Scovel Shinn taught us to say, I am in the right place at the right time, successfully engaged in the right activity for myself and also for someone who I don't even know the impact of me doing what it is I'm doing will have on them. Oh, and what kind of impact am I having? I remember visiting a friend in England, and we grew up together in South Africa, and he said, oh, Edward, my brother is so excited that you're coming to visit. And I had forgotten he had a younger brother because the age difference was so large, and I could barely remember the young guy. And the doorbell rang, and in came this young man, and he said, Edward, you're my hero. And I said, thank you. Why? And he said, oh, because you were such a rebel at school. You always got away with smoking. You always got skipped out of school, and I just wanted to be like you. I said, thank you. I didn't even know he was watching. Yesterday at the graduation of Reverend Sayota Bell, one of our favorite speakers, Reverend Deborah Johnson, spoke, and she reminded us that you and I are breathing the breath of life into everything that we put out there because of what lives in us. Whether we know it or not. And she reminded the students to let their light shine. And she reminded them to not be overly concerned with whether or not someone deserves their light. But instead to shine their light like the sun does. And it shines on the just and the unjust alike. And what I got from that was the reminder, Edward, you and me, don't be overly concerned with being the biggest, brightest, bestest light. Instead, be the light that you were uniquely created to be. Because we may not know that the part we are playing in the parking lot, in the supermarket, in school, is raising up a flowing prophet. Tom Brokaw wrote a book called The Greatest Generation, and in which he includes the recollection of people who fought in World War II. Second World War, the interviews, and now these people had horrific experiences of, you know, loss and violence. And instead of the book being filled up with complaints and regret, what really comes through is this pride at having played some part in changing the world for the better. That's not the most fascinating part. The most fascinating part is that only a few of the people interviewed in the book were epic, mythic leaders, lead actors. You know, like generals and captains and medal winners. Most of the people in the book are just plain old ordinary people. Women and men, nurses, pilots, just doing their part. Best supporting actors. You and I may not know why we are in the situations we find ourselves in, or what good will come of it, or how the part we are playing factors into all of it. I suggest that the movie cannot be complete without you being exactly where you are. It may be incomprehensible to you that your actions or your living can make a single difference. I believe it does. I believe that there is an other side to your tapestry. John Cousins, a blogger, wrote this about tapestries. So what of the back then? Should we criticize its messiness? Should we snip off all the hanging threads? Should we somehow try to tidy it up? Well, again, not really. The structure of the tapestry's reverse is what makes the front work so well. It's what holds it all together. It's what gives the work its shape and form. Perhaps there are elements of your own makeup which you may wish were different. Maybe there are episodes of your life that you long to have been able to handle differently. But, and it's a big but, isn't it those loose threads and uneven stitches which have been instrumental in making you who you are today? Instead of unproductively wishing you could change the unchangeable, maybe there is merit in recognizing their value, celebrating them even. In fact, here's wholeheartedly to the messy background embroidery that's got you to where you are today. It's all part of the two sides of life's rich tapestry. I invite you to breathe in with me and exhale, letting your eyes close. As we turn our attention to the atmosphere of prayer where we each in our own way contemplate the nature of the Divine One, I recognize it as the living Spirit Almighty that is everywhere present, above and below, the heart of the world. In and through all creation. And I identify with it as being my abode, the place where I live, that which I'm made of, that which I inherit. So I identify that the love in my heart is an expression of the eternal love of creation, that the wisdom that guides me intuitively is a reflection of the ultimate intelligence that creates all. And this I identify as being so for everyone here today and everyone everywhere. All life imbued with the same holiness. And so I realize then that everything is sacred. Everything. And even though there are times when I cannot comprehend it, or understand it, or figure it out, or see the pattern, I turn to this acknowledgement that everything is sacred, holy, complete. With this realization, then, I began to walk away from any hypnotism that causes me to think otherwise, from any habits or activity that distract me from the expression of my best self. I let myself move flowingly, humbly, appreciating, even joyfully acknowledging the simplicity of what is mine to do. This rejoicing allows me to relax, to trust the spiritual laws that have always done what they do and continue to do that. I mention the laws to remind myself that it is not I, but the power within that does the work that flows through me. And that is why I confidently say, it is done, and so it is. Invite you to take another breath in, followed by a sigh. We use that movement of breath to make the transition to our spiritual practice of circulation. Circulation is a practice that includes receiving, giving, acknowledging, celebrating. So this morning, when you make your contribution to your center, I invite you to expand your heart to all the other aspects of circulation. Let your imagination range into the greater yet to be. And imagine with me someone, somewhere, benefiting from the work that we are doing today, just sitting here. I invite the ushers to stand. Won't you please take your gift in your hand, or if you gave electronically, place your hand on your chest as a symbol of your heart connection to your center and your practice. And say after me, I bless this gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It does amazing work in the world. And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.